Okay, next on the agenda is the Blue Crab Fisheries Management Plan Amendment 3 update. Jason Rock and Corin Flora.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Jason Rock. I'm the blue crab biologist for the state. This is Corin Flora. She's the co-lead on the management plan with me. Just a brief update on the development of the plan. Things are progressing as scheduled. We've presented all six issue papers and all plan sections to the advisory committee. The issue papers we've gone through include sustainable harvest, because the stock assessment determined the stocks overfished and overfishing is occurring. Qualitative management measures, protections for diamondback terrapins, water quality, crab spawning sanctuaries, and bottom disturbing gear. As Catherine said, our next meeting is next Thursday in Washington, if anybody would like to attend. We'll be discussing or continuing our discussion on spawning sanctuaries and sustainable harvest options that were requested by the advisory committee. Excuse me. Right now we are on track to bring the full draft of Amendment 3 to the AC in June and to this commission in August, so it can be sent for public and standing advisory committee review in the fall. One thing I would like to note, as some of you are aware, Monterey Bay Aquarium Seafood Watch Program recently released some new ratings for all blue crab fisheries on the East Coast and Gulf of Mexico. And all the pot fisheries for states from Virginia south through Texas, including North Carolina, were rated as red or avoid. Previously, they were all rated as yellow or a good alternative. Primary reason for the avoid ranking is a lack of protection for diamondback terrapins in those states. The states to the Maryland and north have some protections in them, so they were all labeled as yellow or a good alternative. The only fishery that was rated as green was a trotline fishery in Maryland, and that's because it has no impacts with other species. But we are working with the advisory committee, other industry members, and Seafood Watch on potential solutions for this. And we'll have options in Amendment 3 for the MSC to address this issue.
Any questions? Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a quick question on this Seafood Watch Monterey Bay thing. You know, I've been in on the, I've heard some of the conversation about the terrapins and the excluders, and, you know, we sort of identified the hot spots on where, you know, these terrapins are really occurring. And my question is, and I don't know how much understanding you have, what would, to become back yellow, I guess, which is a better color than red, whatever that means, would the entire state have to adhere to a terrapin excluder, or would they be satisfied with an option that sort of protects the terrapin in the areas that have been identified as the hot spot, so to speak?
It's hard to say how they would interpret whatever we might do as far as terrapins go. Like you said, we've identified, you know, some hot spots in the southern area of the state. You know, some of that could be due to just that's where a lot of research has been done. It's possible if somebody were to go looking for them in the northern part of the state, they might find some populations. Historically, they've been all throughout North Carolina. But as far as the states that were in the yellow, their regulations, they have a mixture of things. Either requiring excluders for some portions of the fishery or area closures where there's some known hotspots of them. I think it's like Maryland, they don't allow them in the small tidal creeks where a lot of the terrapins are. They restrict the crabbing to the deeper waters. But they also require excluders for like their recreational pots and stuff. So it's hard to say. I mean, I think for us, some we would need. The biggest issue we have is in the southern part of the state right now. Now if that gets addressed in Amendment 3, how Seafood Watch, if they would determine that's enough for them, I can't say.
Anybody else? Doug.
Thank you. I guess I'm at the forefront of this because I've been leading the charge to basically bring this to their attention because it has severely crippled the feasibility of selling a lot of retailers a lot of product because they're going, all of them are going to this MSC or Seafood Watch or whatever. And, you know, when we're looking at our plan compared to Maryland's, which is what we're trying to, I'm trying to base our attack plan back on, they have what they call spatial water closures, which are the heads of the tidal creeks and stuff like that. And while we can't begin to interpretate what they're going to say out there, because, I mean, they've been on the phone with them constantly, and I don't think they've got a clear a picture as it could be given by those people. But while I don't know how in the world to begin to interpret, I believe if we can get these so-called But while I don't think there's any way to speak for those people, then I believe if we show an effort, because that was one of their comments, you know, if you begin to show an effort of how you're going to handle this down the line, maybe we can get back to a yellow status. What I find incredible in all their paperwork and the way they've got Louisiana listed red, yeah, they're MSC certified. Now you figure that one out. So, you know, it's as much a special interest cause and agenda and a political ploy as it is anything. But still, it's causing problems, and we've got to try to react to it.
Yeah. Steve?
Yeah, and just to follow up on what Jason had said, you know, we've been, Jason and Corinne, and we've been in contact with these people. We had a really productive call, I think, with them the other day. We talked about seven of their scientists just to kind of get a better handle on, you know, measures to get off of their list and that sort of stuff. But I think it's, I think we can continue that engagement with them. You know, they're using market as a way to drive change, and so, you know, we're not going to reach over to California and turn that switch on or off. It doesn't, you know, so it is what it is, really. And I think when I've talked with Commissioner Cross and others about this, you know, the immediate impact to us from the commercial side now appears to be from the processing, from the picking houses, and not really to the crabbers directly. But, you know, I think that will happen probably fairly soon. So.
Yeah. Go ahead, Doug.
Just to give you an example, starting Monday when this report come out, all your compliance people with your major wholesalers and whatnot to have these programs in place now for retail sales, they started calling everybody up and down the East Coast, where are you buying your crabs? Where are you buying your crabs? And they're going to systematically eliminate people off of that list. So it is going to cause huge marketing issues, which in turn is going to flow downhill to the crabbers. It's going to be a problem. So, I mean, it is a very... it is a very serious situation, and I mean, we've got to try to get back to where we can basically market our product to keep the prices up for everybody. So it's a very serious situation.
It's good to know it's that serious. I had no idea. I thought it was just some group with a concern. Yeah, Mike.
Thanks for a follow-up, Mr. Chairman. Is there any literature that they've sent, like any a report? You referenced the report right then.
It's on their website. You can pull it up. You've got a spatial summary of it, and then you, but you want to get the entire report, and it lists it all the way down, and it's.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just more. And I know the director just.
Oh, they got it. And they've got a phone call synopsis too.
Offer some information
too.
About the conversation. I would just really like to get a grasp on what they want to see that, you know, would sort of be satisfying to them, or in the direction they would be start to be satisfied, because, you know, so, this is pretty important. Right,
so we did ask them, a whole series of questions, and you know, we're just very candid in our discussion, but part of it was, you know, can we break states down into parts, northern, southern, because, you know, the sound, northern sound regions are very different from the intertidal regions in the south. They didn't say no, but, you know, they're going to want verification, basically. I mean, it's, you know, trust but verify type of an approach from them. And but the primary issue that they have with all the pot fisheries, as Jason indicated, from Virginia South, is just their interactions with the diamondback terrapins, and that. So as soon as that happens, that red flags that, or red boxes it, or whatever they call it, puts it in the avoid category. And until we address that, either through exclusion areas or excluders or some way to mitigate that, that's, you know, that's going to be what they put on there. So,
all right, Doug.
I feel like I should speak up on this, because this is pretty much coming down on me in my fishery personally. So, and it's been a long drawn out, this has been going on for years, and it kind of started with a research project by some people. I went to UNCW, started out with a research project, and the Masonboro Sound, which is a primary area where I fish, I'm on the advisory board for them. I've donated bait, I've helped them build traps to catch these, so I've been nothing but cooperative. But at the end of this, I also have a business where I sell crab meat, and I actually compete with these big box retailers that are relying on these NGOs to assess the. So personally, my self-interest, I mean, I can come up with ways to exclude terrapins, and I will do that, but I'm worried about setting a precedent of a excluder closing areas, because it won't stop in my area, I don't believe. Now, may have some other people that disagree with me, but if I set the precedent to say this works or that doesn't work or close these areas, as soon as anyone else interacts with terrapins, then they're going to have to follow through the same sort of measures. So it's a little bit dangerous. And if I'm going to be completely frank, the Monterey Bay Aquarium, they're not over here studying this. They are, they're not involved in, they don't know that these crabs coming from my area, they don't go to a picket house. So they're actually not really involved in any of this thing. They're really just trying to protect the terrapin in an overarching way. And so I'm not here to dig my heels in. I understand Doug's problem 100%. We talk about it a lot, and I know I want more picket houses. I wish we could have more. So I'm just trying to take this very tactfully and make sure that we're proactive on exactly what we're going to do. And I understand they're trying to change, you know, public opinion through consumer choice, but we're tasked with sustainability here. That's why we're all here. We're the ones that are supposed to figure out what is good for the terrapin. You know, the idea that we're going to be crushed by this California NGO that doesn't understand our fisheries, it's a little disturbing on a more human kind of level. So that's kind of where I'm at with that issue. But once again, I want to say, I'm not here to dig my heels in. I've got a crab pot in the back of my truck right now with an excluder that we've been working on. But I'm concerned about going forward and saying, yeah, we're all for it. We'll do whatever we can, this and that, and then that cascading into more, and instead of increasing our production with crab houses, it really constrains our production. So that's kind of, and I'm, you guys have any questions on terrapins or anything about it, I'm happy to, I know too much. So
Doug.
And I agree with Sam that, you know, we've got to be careful. That's why I believe that if we somewhere down the line can look at spatial closures in a combination of only those areas using these maybe restrictive traps. But I'll just give you a quick example. And I mean, and you're right. I hate to have anybody on the West Coast dictating policy on marketing or whatever, but just to give you an example, Thai Union, which is Chicken of the Sea, unbeknownst to anybody, was working on a NGO basically program in Sri Lanka now for 2 years. They basically went and got it sustainably approved in Sri Lanka now, and because they're approved, they've gone out and took two of the larger retailers in the United States' entire crab meat business away from local crab houses. So while it doesn't, we don't need them dictating policy to anybody, it is an effective tool on marketing, and these big box conglomerates now, this is how they're taking business from everybody. So sooner or later, we're going to lose it regardless. And I mean, and I understand you're right. I mean, we got to take it in a slow fashion. I just hope that spatial closures and whatever measures we can come up with combined on a just as low a level as we can get it where it doesn't affect anybody will work, because it's a problem.
I have no idea. Do you have something you want to add, Sam?
I think most consumers are 100%, if they're an educated consumer and they want to do something, they're going to want to buy a U.S. crab meat. I mean, I would imagine that. So they want us. They want us, and they need us. You know, there's no other place to get blue crab meat in the U.S. except for the Southeast. So they rely on us a little more than we think we rely on them, is what I'm saying. So, you know, I would be, and I'm with spatial closures. I think we can work with that. And you know, if I have to, it will be. I'll write a book if I end up not crabbing in this area that I started, and now I'm on the Marine Fisheries Commission. I'll write a book about how this and the entire state of things. But in the end of the day, I really think that we've got to be proactive in how we approach this, rather than letting them dictate. And I know I want to be in a good. I'm going to contact the Monterey Bay as well as the MFC and see what they're, you know, really try to parse down what they want. And the director's done a great job, and I really appreciate. I really do appreciate that. Yeah, that's
right.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so yeah, I'm. That's. I think that's my final kind of summary of this is I'm just trying to we hold the crab meat, we hold the crabs. Whole Foods wants to sell the crab meat. We have a great product. We have a sustainable product, in my opinion. And now you're going to get, obviously that's what we're here talking about with all these fisheries. But for them to want to go overseas instead of us, that would be a poor marketing decision. So yeah. we're in the seat here, I believe. You don't think so,
Steve?
Yeah, just flying back up to a little higher altitude. What these groups look at, and you're seeing more of a movement in this direction on the federal level, ASMFC, Mid-Atlantic Council, they're not looking at just sustainability on a species-by-species basis. They're looking at sort of an ecosystem approach, and they're looking at the impacts of everything. Certainly, when we look at fishery management plans, we also look at that. And as Laura indicated yesterday, and Lee in their presentations, you know, sort of the broader you make that, the more data heavy it has to be. But I think to some degree, the sustainability that is being sought by these groups is a little ahead of the data curve, you know, as far as the available data that most states have on that. But I think it's important to note that's kind of where I think they're coming from. I think we have a great opportunity for industry to work with these groups to be proactive and try to find, you know, common sense middle ground solutions that, you know, where you still have strong markets and profit by this, and I think that's really the approach to have instead of you know, I mean, and it sounds like that's what you want to do, but you certainly don't want to, you know, just.
I don't want it to be gone.
Right, right, right. No, and I. Right, right, right. So I understand that.
Okay, great. Help me understand a little bit more. 100 crab pots. How many of them are going to have terrapins in?
It is really seasonally dependent, and that's what's frustrating about this, because my area, I'm going from fishing in a couple feet of water to 20-something feet of water. When I'm in 20 feet of water, I'm not touching them. There's nothing there. And there's still some of the zones that have been suggested. You know, I've talked to the biologist. I said, well, where does this kind of stop? Because I can tell you there's certain small, tight ditch creeks that I don't even really fish in. Other people, there's a couple other guys down by me. And that's not the, those are the hot spots. But I said, well, what if we close those off and say, well, you know, we actually come into contact with terrapins pretty much everywhere. And so I'm like, well, I'm not going to put these excluders that cost a dollar something per excluder on every throw to the crab pot. And certain times of the year, that's doing nothing, really. And so that's a worry to me. It's like you're messing up this the process of crabbing unbeknownst to everyone. And so I can't really answer how many. In the springtime, it would be certain times of the year, in certain places, it would be high. Other times it would be literally zero. And they're worried about mortalities. It is live release. I'm not going to say I haven't killed a terrapin before. God forbid I say that out loud, but it's generally our live releases. And, you know, the other thing that I'm very, you know, I know this is probably a non-option, but I believe that there's more terrapins now. And I mean, there's been more crabbers. And so, but we can't even get into that. And, you know, there's the advisory board that I'm on. They're getting funding to research some of these. I'd love to work with them, but then I'm nervous because, you know, when you start doing that, the next thing you know, there's a population study and, you know, it's touchy. And so I would say that, I feel like it's one of those things. If I interact with more of them, then it's a bad thing, but that might mean that there's a greater population. So, you know, it's a tough score.
Mike. They're worn out.
Yeah, okay, it's going now. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to try to zoom in on kind of what Sam's trying to say is that he, you know, there's certain parts of the state that you'll never catch one, you know, and that's my concern, is that if they're going to come over in some overarching way to where they're, so, you know, before they release, you know, a better status, you know, every single crab pot that's set in this state has to have some sort of modification to it. And that's going to hinder, you know, quite a bit of catch, if you ask me, you know, putting, you know, mandating excluders. And that's my main concern with all of this is that they don't overreach too much. And, you know, I don't have an issue with trying to adapt to what their standard might be, you know, in other parts of the state. And if the people want to keep crabbing around these terrapins, they're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to dig their heels in and find a way to get along with modified gear or whatever. But I just don't want to see some big criteria come across to get us back to a better standing with these people, because honestly, I don't want to have to deal with them no longer than we have to. You know, I don't want this to have to be some ongoing issue. I want it to be addressed, and I want to be left alone. And I think, you know, that's kind of where I feel like we should, you know, ask them, hey, point blank, what do you want? Give us what you want, and let's look at it, and let's find a solution, and let's move on. And I, you know, any information that can be brought back to us would be great. If y'all could look into it more, if that's okay. But I want to get past this issue as fast as possible. And I think, you know, everybody in this state, crabber-wise, would agree. So anyway, thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Kenny?
Yes. Just to Commissioner Blanton's point about being concerned about some blanket regulation for everywhere in the state about these. In the issue paper, we do identify from the research kind of an interaction zone with these terrapins, and generally it's in waters that are within 250 meters ashore and less than, I think it's 9 meters deep.
Okay.
Is it 9 meters or? I can't remember. But there's a zone of interaction. Primarily a lot of the waters that meet that definition are down south. You know, there's some along the edges of the, you know, northern rivers and Outer Banks, obviously, in those areas. But we also, there's also other criteria built in to when these excluders would have to be applied, such as, you know, having research that's shown verified populations of terrapins in those areas and interactions, you know, with crabbers in those areas, those sorts of things. So it's not just a, and you'll see when you get the issue paper and we go through it with you, but there's, you know, definite criteria that would have to be met within that, you know, smaller interaction zone. So guys fishing like in the middle of Albemarle Sound, I mean, they'd never interact with the terrapins, so they'd never have to do anything as far as that goes.
All right. Okay, Sam.
I'm curious about, and do y'all have an issue paper? This is every crabber wants to know about natural mortalities with crabs and predation. And I'm just kind of curious what y'all's kind of ongoing kind of, I know it's a very difficult thing to study. I've been to the meetings. I understand. I talked to my brother. It's on the board. So I definitely know that it's tough. And I'm just kind of maybe enlighten us a little bit on how you guys are monitoring that.
I mean, as far as predation goes, I mean, the only way to monitor that is through diet studies. And if you want to have kind of real-time data, you have to be collecting stomachs from fish year-round every year to have to see if there's any changes in that. Because predation is just a portion of natural mortality. It's not all of it. So when we do get natural mortality estimates for the stock assessments, you know, that covers predation as well as, you know, just dying from old age, disease, all sorts of other things.
So when you get those estimates, like how does that, where does that spring from? Is it from the diet studies that you guys are doing, or is it just kind of a extrapolation, or how does that work?
Like Laura had said yesterday, as far as natural mortality, there's some life history based methods for coming up with natural mortality. Those are also just things you know about the species that could factor into that. And if there's been studies that have tried to look at natural mortality, sometimes they're able to get at that through like tagging studies, that sort of thing. That doesn't go just to the predation aspect. It's, you know, all of natural mortality.
So, like, would you look at a stock assessment of, like, red drum or striped bass and that and use a present? Because I'm more concerned about changing times with, you know, predation. Like, maybe we have a good year class of a certain fish. I know we had an extremely good year. I caught red drum. I mean, there's red drum like crazy for a little while. So I'm kind of just curious, like, is it a real-time... I would love to see that, and I know it's an extreme scientific data challenge, you know, but I would love to see kind of a real-time estimate of predation.
Yeah, and like I said, to get that real-time estimate of predation, you'd have to have an ongoing diet study every year to do that. There was a study that was done recently for Pamlico Sound area that looked at predation, looked at like 25 different predator species. So they came up with some... and plugged all that data into an ecosystem model to see those interactions between the predators and prey. But as far as being able to use that kind of information for a stock assessment, we'd have to be collecting stomachs from practically every fish we run into, and keeping that, that'd be like a whole new sampling program for us to try to do, to get that information to plug in year to year.
So you can't really think of any baby step or anything we can do as just to, you know, to get some, I just want to get some sort of foothold on this, because I really, you know, this is my own personal, just as a crabber, I know that this is significant, and it's tough to sit in, you know, these meetings and assess a population without having a real, you know, just something to a foothold. I know we have something, but I, you know, a little, maybe a baby step in the direction that we can, yeah, start getting a little more. I don't know if anything you could think of, or, yeah. outside of a really just all-encompassing, you know, diet study.
Yeah, I mean, and really to do that, what you're talking about is more ecosystem management, to see those different interactions, and the data needs for those are extremely intense. We think they're a lot for single species stock assessments. When you start going down that road, they get unwieldy.
Yeah. Quick question, Jason and young lady. Are you aware of any fish, fowl, raccoon, possum, marsupials, mammals, whatever, that can catch a shrimp or a crab or a minnow that are basically a prey species? It doesn't just eat them like a fat kid at the movie with a $5 popcorn bag. They're prey species. Please, in the name of God, even though you're harvesting them for sale, they're put here in a chain and or in a pyramid, and unfortunately, they're on the bottom.
Yeah, I mean,
Sam.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Chuck. It's really more of, in terms of assessing, you know, when we look and we say something's overfished and overfishing's occurring and we have natural mortality so high and we don't have a hold on it and we can't figure out, and of course they're getting eaten, of course they're prey. It's just we're making our management decisions based on that. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to get a hold of. I'm not saying that doesn't happen and, you know, we shouldn't change our, you know, our management methods, but we certainly want to know what's going on, you know, and that's what I'm trying to go towards, is just something. And I believe that there is. I'm a problem solver, so I really believe that there's got to be a way, a low-hanging fruit way to understand this. And we've got lots of scientists here in the room. There's lots of people that would, I think this would be a great project for, and I'm going to keep on my own brain trying to figure out something that we can at least go forward on.
All right. Right. Anything? Yes.
So like Laura said yesterday, there's a lot of ways in our models that we could estimate mortality, but in our model for our assessment, we did use a North Carolina-based mortality study that was done by Eggleston. Which we looked at several mortalities for that study. There have been a couple in North Carolina. There have been a couple in Virginia that look at the different mortality rates. Now, all of those do have a wide range in their mortality, and yeah, it's not a real-time mortality, but it is a over time, so it takes into consideration those year-to-year variations. So we didn't just guess at the mortality. It has been studied in North Carolina, and there have been several of those, and I know Eggleston has been doing several over time and adding on to that mortality study and whatnot. So it is being looked at, and it's something that we do follow.
Okay, great. Anybody else? Thank y'all very much for your presentation. Before we get into southern flounder, we're going to take about a 15-minute break. We are having some technical issues where the WebEx is not working. We need to reboot the system, it looks like. It's going to take 10 to 15 minutes. So there's a lot of people out there that are wanting to listen in, so we're going to do that. And so don't go too far. I may call you back in 2 minutes, but it's probably going to be more like 15.